Possession crucial from this. How much longer will the referee allow? Dublin lead by a point. And there's the whistle. It's over. It's over.
We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road, and that's not going to be taken away from us.
What I love in hurling, I love players that never give in.
He hits it. He hits it. What? It's over the bar. Oh, holy Moses.
Hello and welcome to the RTGA podcast. I'm Mikey Stafford. Welcome along. This week I am joined by Rory O'Neill, series producer of the Sunday Game, and by Declan Welly of RTE Online. How are you doing, lads?
Hey, Mikey.
As always, this time of year, there's plenty of little bitty bits of news to go through. The first bit is probably not that little bitty. If you're from Mayo, it's getting quite interesting down there now. Tim O'Leary, the London-based, as he's been called, wealthy backer of Mayo GAA, he's making more claims through the media, which I'm sure they're loving in the county board. He's now saying that the county's main sponsor and stadium sponsor, Elvries, get 100 All-Ireland final tickets if Mayo make the All-Ireland final. And for this, they supposedly Elvries pay Mayo a €10,000 bonus, but his argument is that's actually a €1,000 bonus for making the final, because the cost of 10 tickets at €90 a piece is €9,000. It's no coincidence Tim O'Leary wants to become the main sponsor of Mayo GAA, so it's in his interest to kind of get this story out there. Unfortunately, Mayo, you know, are refuting it in full. They're saying sponsors' tickets are invoiced and paid for in full, and we're expecting a full response next week from the next county board meeting. And there's some startling figures in here, Rory. I suppose the one that's kind of catching most people's eye is that in the last number of years, there's been, as Tim O'Leary called it, a significant movement in catering costs, up from €172,369 to €423,056.
That's, I mean, that is eye-watering. You would... If anybody was, you know, conducting due diligence over good governance, and you know, from a financial perspective, your finance officer would probably have a few questions to answer there, because it's very odd to see the bill treble. It's food is expensive. Running inter-county teams is expensive. You're feeding between players and management, backroom staff, probably the county board themselves, whoever else might be there. Could be anything up to 70, 80 people, maybe two or three nights a week. So nobody would have any quibble around a food bill of substantial nature. But how does it treble in the space of 2 years? That's, you know, like the issue for Mayo is, Mayo always seem to be the story when even when they're not the story. I mean, this time last year, I think they had fierce problems in the ladies' football side of it with the issue in and around Carnacon. And, you know, here we are now where they're back in the headlines again for all the wrong reasons. I'm a bit surprised, I'll be honest. I would have felt that as a county that they, you know, generally speaking, do their business quite well. You know, I know Paul Canan down there, who's the PRO, is very, very good fella, you know, really hardworking. It's just... It's a bit of a mess, and you having a war of words via the media where they're firing stuff back and forth in terms of accusation and counter-accusation is certainly no way to go about it.
No, Declan, the thing is, it is a huge operation. Those numbers, even if it had stayed at €170,000 for food, it's clearly... This is an operation that costs a lot of money. We already know that, you know, Mayo is one of the biggest counties in the country. The transport within the county for the teams is costs a lot of money, but they're doing midweek training in Dublin, and when the Knights, the lads based in Dublin, are coming down, they're coming down by a minibus. Even running just the men's senior team in Mayo is a huge operation, but when you take into account that that's not all they're running all the championships, they're running underage, they're running all the other county teams, more and more it seems that GA administration isn't really a job for... It's a job as opposed to it being something you can volunteer to do.
Yeah, and I suppose we probably shouldn't be overly surprised, because there is a pattern over the last few years. We see neighbours Galway are kind of in financial strife, but I suppose county boards haven't really changed a whole pile, you know, over the last few decades, but the sums of money involved in the game certainly have. So we're expecting professional standards from essentially amateur people who are, in most cases you'd imagine, are doing their best, but really we're expecting much more of them now. And we've seen so many other county boards, Cork, Offaly, Kildare in recent years have you know, Croke Park have had to intervene in some cases. So this is the latest.
Watford,
I think there's probably many more there as well that I haven't mentioned. But the sums of money that are swirling around now and the preparation involved, that you'd wonder now where the majority of county boards actually fit for purpose.
Yeah, well, it's a vicious circle, isn't it? Because on one hand, you have volunteers, you know, giving up their evenings, you know, after their day jobs, etc., to administer these rather large businesses. On the other side of things, you're involved in an arms race now, aren't you? Like, if you're a dual county, like, say, Tipperary or to an extent Wexford, you're spending upwards of €1 million on your senior inter-county teams. €1 million on two teams. We've come an awful long way in 20 years, and everyone agrees the standard of what we see on the pitch and what we see on our TVs is going up exponentially. But the cost of that is literally a cost. It's a financial cost, as S&C coaches, nutritionists, statisticians, all this stuff is coming in, and the money is being found, but finding the money and then distributing it correctly and in a clear and coherent manner it's another job entirely, isn't it?
Yeah, and like, if you look at, it's a whole, the people you once described it as a cottage industry. It's no longer a cottage industry. What's going on in terms of, as you described, an arms race, which is effectively what it does feel like. Now, I mean, is it sustainable? I really don't think it is. But how do you reverse that trend? I'm not entirely sure how you can go about that without putting in legislation for it, but whether or not the counties are prepared to sign up to that, and then, you know, people will find means and ways to circumvent the rules anyway. So I'm not entirely sure how effective any legislation might be. But like Kevin McStay in his book there recently, he's made a very good suggestion, which I think where he makes the point that every county board should have one person employed in a full-time role, in a CEO, in that role of as chief executive officer, to oversee all of the affairs in that county. Now, there's probably only about 4 or 5 county boards out there that have full-time people. The vast majority of them are all still being run by amateurs. And that's why you see problems like this arise then. You know, we shouldn't be surprised then when the problems do come up, because you have certain people who are sitting at home, they're flat to the mat with whatever job they might have on a day-to-day basis, which is ultimately their breadwinner to pay the bills. And then they come home that night to a raft of emails and have to go and attend meetings here and meetings there. You know, I don't think it's feasible for those people in the long term.
What do you think, Declan? Rory, that there's a suggestion there that it's full-time staff, or should some of the responsibilities, Croke Park won't like you saying this, but should a lot of it be centralised, like the financial side of things, whether that means a pooling of money or at least a sharing of expertise, or should something be done to help out these county secretaries and chairmen who are clearly, a lot of them, not all of them, some are doing a fantastic job, but they're drowning in admin.
Yeah, it was actually another suggestion that Kevin McStay made during the summer, was that for a county like Mayo, well, most counties actually, where you're paying so much in travel expenses, that should come from a central fund within GAA, and that food and transportation should be taken away from the county board, because there's such significant costs in a lot of counties that if that's catered for centrally, then the rest should be governed yourself. It makes it more manageable. It seems like one practical suggestion. But also, we're talking about Mayo, who have strong commercial power. They have, I think they may have some time, full-time people within the county board. Joe, this is a county that, with benefactors, think of the other counties who are really floundering, that this is, I know the numbers are quite big when you see them written down, but they're a successful county bringing a lot of money. How many other county boards are probably, we haven't heard about yet, but maybe they're on the brink at the moment. So definitely intervention. We definitely need intervention. I think that suggestion by Kevin McStay would be a great starting point. Whether that'll come into play, you know, we may need to see other sorry stories before something's actually kicked into action.
And on the whole area around your commercial, the leverage that you can wield in terms of developing the commercial side of your business, which is effectively what county boards are. Ultimately, it mightn't happen today or tomorrow, but the GAA at central level are probably going to have to grasp that nettle eventually. And I think the only fairest way, and if you want to reintroduce an element of parity and fairness into how you conduct, because finance is now becoming so such an indelible part to successful teams. We saw it with Tipperary and the size of their backroom staff this year. Dublin are no different. I know now that sometimes that's depicted unfairly on them. What make of that what you will. But if you look at an organisation like FIFA, right? And FIFA, they have their problems, as we know. But there's no such thing. If you go to a World Cup, a soccer World Cup, that is, England can't do their own water, sponsor, or their own, all of the sponsorships, it's all FIFA based. And then the monies that they bring in on those sponsorship agreements are dispersed equally via the 32 teams that qualify.
The NFL model as well.
Yeah, and I mean, it works really well, because if Ghana qualify, they get the same amount that Germany get. But if taking an arbitrary figure of, let's say, €1 million to Ghana is going to be a hell of a lot more valuable than €1 million would be to Germany. And that would help level up the playing field somewhat. And I think it's a nettle that the GA will eventually have to grasp.
Okay. We'll move on to a few more stories doing the rounds. The Galway football saga ended last week with Pádraig Joyce being appointed, and we're getting closer to a new Clare Hurling manager. Yeah. It's taken 2 weeks for nothing to happen. We're basically where we were. It's going to be Brian Lowen or Louis Mulqueen. And the players obviously came out in favour of the man who these guys will be succeeding, Declan. It's still a mess.
Yeah, it's just continuing on and on. It's a bit of a Brexit feel to it, this one, and I feel there's a lot of politics going on, even more politics that we probably aren't aware of. But it does seem that from hearing from some past players and coming from the county, that seems to be a strong groundswell behind Brian Lohan, that it appeared that he was going to be put forward last time around until the clubs decided to, put this extension in place. Now we're still back to the same two names. It seemed like Brian Lohan, he's kind of put forward, his own plan. Although when he himself and Louis Mulqueen were interviewed the first time around, they weren't actually asked even about their management team, I think. So they still have to kind of give more of their plan to the county board, but it's definitely between those two. And it looked like Brian Lohan last time around. I don't know if much has actually changed since then.
Yeah. Rory, he's...
Brian Lohan, I would imagine, would have been an absolute shoo-in. Like he's done his apprenticeship quite well at Fitzgibbon Cup level. I think that has actually been partly a part of the problem, because there was an incident, I think, involving LIT and UL.
That's right.
And who happened to be the manager of the opposing team a few years back, which I think was the originator of the row between himself and the Fitzgeralds, which I think might be part of the problem why Brian is struggling to get the endorsement, that maybe his credentials should... considering his status in the game nationally and certainly within Clare, you could not say that Brian Lohan doesn't deserve a go at this stage. And I mean, I think Dalo made the point last week in his piece that Louis Mulqueen has been he's been involved with three different Clare setups at this stage. So a fresh voice might not be any harm in terms of an original manager.
Yeah, indeed. Another man venturing into management is Ger Brennan. Sometime RTE pundit, sometime everybody pundit, let's be fair. When the Drive for Five was on, Ger Brennan, the sun never set on his media appearances. But I think everybody was very impressed with him. He came across as a thinker of the game. He's obviously, kind of running UCD's fairly well thought of GAA operation. But now he's moving on. Well, not moving on. He's obviously keeping his full-time job, but he's going to take on a role as Bray Emmett's manager. Bray Emmett's... We were just chatting about it. Massive catchment area, fantastic facilities. I was shocked to read it. I think it's over 80 years since they've won the Wicklow Football Championship. So Declan, he's not going in on too high a rung.
Yeah, it would be very interesting to see who he gets on. I think from what we've seen of Ger on the pitch was teak tough. And I think maybe some people have been surprised that when he's discussing the game as an analyst, he does seem quite a deep thinker. And, in discussing passages of play, he's clearly going through... aspects from an attacking and defensive point of view. He's kind of earning his stripes, and it'll be interesting to see how he gets on with Bray Emmett's. You'd imagine that the trainings will be quite intense, and he'll tightening them up at the back anyway, if that is an issue for them, you'd imagine.
You've worked with him a bit, Rory.
I mean, look, he's got a fantastic knowledge on the game. He's very much in tune with the histories and the traditions of it. I think it's brave. It's a brave first venture into management. Look, Jura's coming from obviously the Vincent's background is there, and then you know he had a very good career with Dublin as well, and he's obviously gone in with UCD. He's probably learned a huge amount working under the likes of Dave Billings and Brian Mullins, and obviously Mickey Whelan. I mean, three guys there, you know, that would have an encyclopedic knowledge on Gaelic football. I think Jura always struck me as the kind of fella that would make for a good coach. And I think it's a good challenge for him, and you'd wish him well.
Certainly would. Another man we'll wish well is Con O'Callaghan, who, according to his manager in Coola, Willie Maher, who we had on here a couple of weeks ago, suffering from a very bad dead leg. Lads, I don't know if you saw this or not, but Con scored the opening goal of the match, and it was his last act in the Dublin Hurling final, which Coola went on to win against St. Bridget's. He managed to finish the ball to the net despite being clattered rather high above the knee by the leg of St. Bridget's and Dublin goalkeeper Alan Nolan. And I'm just interested to get your thoughts on if you did see it, because to me, straight away, I thought about last year's Dublin Senior Hurling Final when Gary Maguire made a similar, possibly more robust challenge on Kilmacud's Mark Howard, received no sanction during the game. Mark Howard had to undergo knee surgery, and Gary Maguire eventually got a two-match retrospective ban. I used to play in goal in hurling a little bit at underage. It's when someone was running through in goal, I used to sink into the net. I used to kind of try and get as far away from this person as possible. But obviously, if you're a good goalkeeper, you're coming out, you're narrowing your angles. But there's a line there, Rory, I think. Mm. There's narrowing your angles, and then there's like kind of Carl Schumachering somebody.
It was a lunge. And yeah, and I look, goalkeepers are probably told, make themselves big, you know, use your body. Your body's a much bigger weapon than the hurley is. So if you can use that to block the ball, well and good. But you do have a duty of care, especially at that level as well, to your opponents, and particularly in hurling. It was a red card. I mean, for him not to have even picked up a booking, I don't know what the referee, maybe he didn't see it, but it was a red card. It was very, very dangerous, and you just can't have that in hurling. You can't.
No, Declan, we're not going to hang the man here. We saw one angle on it, two angles on it. But if it's not in the referee's report and he took no action, which he didn't, you could see history repeating itself here. If Gary Maguire got a two-match retrospective ban, you could see Alan Nolan picking up some kind of punishment for that attack.
Yeah, I think especially with the precedent from last year, you'd be more surprised if it didn't happen. And now Cooler back out in 2 weeks' time against St. Mullins, and it's supposed to be a very bad dead leg. You'd hope he'd be back for that. But even the goal was an incredible goal. Like, he's probably the most exciting football talent, and that goal was launched downfield, I think, by David Moran. Caught the ball inside, got inside the defender. Now, this is the third minute of the game, so you think maybe an early point to settle him down.
Yeah, yeah.
He's going straight for goals. And even as goalkeeper comes out, he doesn't shoot just before contact. There's a little shimmy and, nesses it into the corner. It's controlled composure from him. He's just such an exciting player.
Yeah, the difference, if you look at, and I know, look, there's no point in crying over the spilt milk. No, he's not going to play hurling at intercounty level. That's just the reality of it. But if you looked at Dublin last year and you looked at the one area where they maybe struggle quite a bit, it's a target man, full forward, ball winning sort of scoring threat. And this guy is, and I know it's club level, but you can see the level of talent that he has would transmit and compute right up to intercounty level so easily. And what a difference he would make to Dublin hurling. You know, he transformed their ambitions almost overnight.
Yeah, and then from Coola's perspective, I know they had a fairly comfortable journey through the Dublin Championship, and St. Mullins won the Carlo hurling title there at the weekend, but you'd expect that they wouldn't be strong enough to put it up to them. But Conor Callan, Football of the Year nominee, but he'd be integral to them if they're looking to kind of reclaim an All-Ireland title. Mm.
Yeah. Well,
and it overshadowed, by the way, it overshadowed what was a very, like a really tough contest. It was winter hurling again to a large extent, you know, heavy enough pitch. Grass looked a little bit long for my liking in Parnell. And, you'd have to give Bridget's a huge amount of credit. I mean, they stuck in there, you know.
Because they lost by 19 points to them earlier on the championship.
Yeah. Mm. You know, like they made it a right good contest now. Obviously, going off early probably helped a little bit in that regard, but at the same time, you'd have to give Bridget's a bit of credit as well, even though, look, a defeat is not much good to them now.
Yeah, considering it's a championship that's, you know, a championship that's delivered two All-Ireland titles for Coola in the last few years. The Dublin Hurling Championship is, it's a remarkably, at the top level, it is, it's very competitive. Mm. The last three rounds of it have been excellent this year.
Crave Kieran's, they're starting to make a little bit of a comeback. Obviously, Bowden will always be there. Kilmacud Crokes, Vincent's, you know, had a reasonably good year. They would have serious ambitions on a dual level. You know, and the Dublin Hurling, like, this is the one thing that I was very surprised at when I first got moved up here. Like, it's a very competitive champ. Luke at Sarsfield's, fine side as well. It's a hell of a lot better than I had originally envisaged, and you know, and I think it'll probably go from strength to strength.
Okay, thanks, lads. Now, as we know, the Tier 2 Football Championship proposal passed with over 75% of the vote at Special Congress on Saturday. The Tipperary motion passed first, so at least the Tier 2 will be linked to next year's League Championship, next year's Allianz League, so we'll have a season-long interest, so to speak, but it's fair to say this move has generated a lot of debate. It generated debate beforehand, but we kind of think a lot of people weren't listening. Now they tend to be listening a bit more. And Westmeath footballer Kieran Martin was on Game On last night with Marie Crowe, and he was asked if the prospect of losing to Dublin in the Leinster Championship and being left into Tier 2 would see a lot of his teammates hanging around to play Tommy Murphy Cup, or would they head off to America?
No, and I don't think they will, and I don't think that you'll get the backing from the supporters either, or it's the county board. It's hard to know what way it will go. It could either go for you or against you. And I suppose the fact that America is there and players are coming and going, it's a better chance that they will go. It's a bigger chance they will go there, because, again, you're not classed as in the top level.
Kieran, so if you happen to go down and get beat by Dublin, you'd prefer not to play to win something? You'd prefer to head off? You'd prefer not to be a winner? Do you think you can beat Dublin? Be dead honest.
Well, we have to be realistic. Like, I suppose they're coming off their five in a row. We're hoping that they might take their eye off the ball. But, it's not going to define our year. We have to be realistic going into it, but we have to be kind of somewhat confident and make sure that we can do everything we can to try and beat them. And if it doesn't happen, so we move on from there. I don't think lads will kind of fade away after that. You'll have a few off every team that will, but I think 99% of the teams, they're after committing for so many months before that for the sake of another month or two.
So that's the player's perspective, and that was Ruby Walsh, not Marie Crowe. There's a cast of thousands on Game On these days. It's Donico Callahan, Ruby Walsh and Marie Crowe. You should give it a listen to FM 6 p.m. There's the plug. Now, Morning Ireland will be more familiar to some of you. On Monday morning, Tomás O'Shea was on discussing the Tier 2 proposals, or the Tier 2 championship structure, which is now in, and he was dismissing any fears of elitism.
Well, I suppose it's going to be very hard on Division 3 and 4 teams, in that if they lose their first game, that's it, they're out of the run for a Sam. And that's the big changer here, I think. I think it's a huge step. A lot of people say it's a step towards elitism. I don't agree with that, because if so, hurling is elitist for the last few years, and I don't believe it to be elitist, to be honest with you. You know, there's a romantic idea that all teams should have the right to compete with the top teams, but I get that, you know, but there are 2 months, Damien, of championship football in the May and June that there's an awful dip, and something has to change. You have to do something. It won't please everybody. The Tommy Murphy Cup was there between 2004 and 2008. That failed to capture the public imagination. And I do think the GAA will do everything they can to actually promote this. But don't kid ourselves. I think it'll be better promoted, but don't expect full houses. Don't expect the razzmatazz like that the Dubs and Kerry and Mayo will get. It won't be like that, you know. And I've admired counties, so that the so-called weaker counties, for years, and how they get the drive to compete with no chance of actually winning. But here, they will have to drive at this and buy into it as well as the GAA buy into it, you know. Give them more support. Like, I think in long term, all these clubs, if it's a case that it will develop them and it will give them a kind of a stairs where they can aim to get something, make themselves better, I think you have to give support to the people on the ground. Like, you have to promote, you try, the aim for the GAA should be try to get coaches into all these clubs so these so-called weaker counties can climb up the ladder. And I think this format will allow for that development. If the hunger is in the counties, if, I mean, I'm saying if, like some of these players, Damien, after championship, if they lose the first round, a lot of them go off to America. Mm. You know, they don't stay around for the second half. And it might seem harsh, but there are levels competing against each other at the height of the summer in GAA calendar we are struggling to find space in that have no business playing each other. Just which leads to provincial championship. I think the big elephant in the room is it's this serious issue. The Munster and Leinster championship are a joke. I'd love to see like colleges and clubs as a result of the length of the inter-county scene suffer.
Okay, that was Tomás O'Shea talking to Damien O'Meara on yesterday's Morning Ireland. I'm delighted to say we're joined by Michael Foley of the Sunday Times, who had the pleasure of being in Páirce Caoimh on Saturday afternoon. Michael, can you give us a sense of the tenor of the debate that preceded this vote?
Yes, the bristling, seething atmosphere of the room that you're looking for, the sparks flying, the general sense that you had to take your jacket off as the debate began, sort of thing, roll your sleeves up. I'll tell you what, right? I mean, normally, when I've been to Congress's Congress, I'm not sure what the plural is, but I've been to a good few of them now at this stage, and what you find, certainly in the last bunch of years, is that a lot of the landmark decisions, a lot of the kind of big-ticket stuff, it's kind of decided before you get there. So, like, a lot of counties are mandated. You kind of know where they're going to vote. So, we say the debate itself on the day is quite stilted, quite quiet, actually, you know. But the difference with last week was that, like, I did a bit of a ring around now the week before last, so the Sunday coming in, so for a piece for the Sunday coming into the next Saturday, you know. Mm. So, by that stage, a lot of counties still hadn't decided. A lot of them were going to decide last week. But what I noticed was you had a rump of Division 1 and 2 counties kind of saying, look, we're going to be guided by what's said on the day. Right? So we're not going to decide what's best for the Division 3 and 4 counties. Let them decide themselves and we'll be guided by what's said on the day. So that automatically opened up an opportunity for a proper debate, right? So which as I say, for these big ticket items, it doesn't happen all the time. So as it panned out on the day, the debate was 35 minutes long. There was 16 different contributors. Roughly speaking, I would say you probably had, out of those 16, you probably had maybe 7 or 8 in favour, 6 against, and a couple kind of just making kind of observations on the thing more than anything. You had, you know, it was a good debate. You had, and what interested me or what I noticed was that you really did have polarized opinions on the same point. Like you had one, you had county saying this is a great opportunity to have a tier two now. It's a great opportunity to actually develop sponsorship opportunities around the possibility of winning something, around promoting. We know where we're at, kind of thing. And then you had the other side saying this is doomsday stuff for trying to get a sponsor, because who's going to want to sponsor a team in a tier two competition? Some of the debate. I mean, the Antrim County Chairman Kieran McAvanagh stood up and spoke very well from his point of view, and he was against the motion. He made the point that he felt that the creation of a tiered system was the beginning of a drift towards pay for play. That in time, I mean, the real gap, the mind. Top 16, bottom 16. There's a top 4, and then there's everybody else. And I think there's something in that. There is something in that, but that's kind of more to do with maybe with how many tiers you really need, sort of thing. But you know, he was kind of really painting a doomsday scenario, and again talking about elitism. I always find the whole thing about elitism unusual. I mean, how can you possibly have any kind of sport without elitism? Like, it never ever makes sense to me when people say we don't want elitism in our game. Well, then how can you ever have an All-Ireland champion if you don't have elitism?
Yeah. Someone has to be better than the next crowd.
Doesn't make sense. But the debate, just going back to it, like, I mean, it was good, strong debate. It was both sides kind of made their point pretty strongly. And to be honest with you, if I was a Division 1 or 2 county, and I was making this point coming into it as well, like, if I was a Division 1 or 2 county trying to decide on the day, I'd be scratching my head.
Yeah.
Because there was no real consensus. There was a real split between the counties that are going to be affected by this new system.
If you weren't sure what way you were going to go, I think the approach to have taken, and I think the most sensible approach, and I think the argument most people are making, is that made by Tracy Kennedy, who said she's one of the Division 1 counties unsure on which way she was going, and she decided, said, well, we do have a fixtures review committee doing their work at the moment. Should we not just stall the ball here and wait to see what comes out of that? And obviously that was thrown out. But to me, and I think to most people, they're simple. Look, maybe, yes, you do have elitism in sport. You're going to have winners and losers. But maybe we shouldn't rush through a legacy project for a GA president when he's already appointed a team of experts, shall we call them, to look into this and to make proposals that could be voted on in a more considered and rounded manner.
Yeah, and I mean, it's one of those, it's a kind of funny kind of thing, like that, you know, for donkeys of years, take any issue you want to pick, and you routinely find the GAA being criticised for being too slow to change. And now that they've decided to take the bull by the horns, as it were, or at least appear to be taking the bull by the horns on something, they're being criticised for moving too fast. But I think in this case, there's absolutely merit, like, in, I mean, the... Just from chatting to people, I mean, the findings won't be made absolutely properly public until next month, but just from chatting to people, particularly over the last month, 6 weeks, like, the sense is that the work they're doing is really impressive.
This is the Fixtures Task Force, Mick, is it?
Yeah, the Fixtures, exactly right, yeah, the Fixtures Task Force that was put together to look into the calendar year and stuff. Now, this issue about, well, what happens if two tiers are brought in has been brought up from the get-go. From the minute there was a special Congress announced, it was like, well, what impact does this have on these guys? And the answer you always got back was that, well, the Fixtures Task Force were aware that this could be the case, always. Yeah. So it's no shock to them that there may be a changing shifting of the deck chairs, let's say, right? Mm. But, I mean, in my opinion, they should have waited. I mean, it's literally a month. You're talking a month before we see what they're at. The argument, again, then, from GA would be, well, if they come up with stuff and they bring it to Congress next February, it could be even harder to get things across the line, bigger crowd, bigger voting, a bigger room to sway, I suppose. Some of their proposals, it was interesting, actually, on a Saturday morning, I noticed in the Irish News had a story outlining some proposals that the Fixtures Task Force were knocking around. So you had a sense of what they were about. Now, the detail was quite vague in some aspects, but it did seem that it was a sort of an idea. They have five different plans, it seems. They have five different plans, one of which involves rounding off the provinces into four groups of eight. And there's various different kind of methods of kind of breaking up the season. One of them, they want to flip the league and championships. You play basically an All-Ireland championship based on what we have as a league now, and you play a provincial championship in the springtime. This kind of stuff, this is all on the table. The point that was made to me before Special Congress by people above in Croke Park was that, yeah, whatever the Fixtures Task Force come up with now, this is before last Saturday, all five ideas contain some kind of a tiered aspect. So you could make the argument that, well, look, what are we doing here? Are we just actually acclimating people to the idea of tiers? Is this the point of what happened last Saturday? This isn't to be, I mean, of course, it's to be on end all for the fellow who's going out playing football next summer. But if you take a step back and look at the bigger picture, well, what are we doing here? Do we agree in principle with the tiered idea? I was just looking there yesterday, like the Club Players Association, Michal Brady has said, yeah, they agree with the concept of tiers. They disagree with this concept of tiers. And I get that. Mm-hmm. I think from the GA point of view, they would have been better off selling this as a kind of this is big picture stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it's obviously going to impact in the short term, and there's a big debate to be had about that.
Yeah.
But, you know, we need to look at it in a kind of on a wider lens as well. Where are we going with this?
Yeah. It's Declan, if you were to come up with a tier two structure, this one definitely has its imperfections. John Fogarty in the Examiner is writing today, obviously this isn't going to happen, but in 2021 there's the potential to have 21 counties in tier one. If the 2020 tier two winner is still in division three or four, and the eight division And eight division three or four counties make the four provincial finals. Obviously, that's not going to happen, but it shows that we've still got a new championship structure that is tied to a provincial championship that Tomás O'Shea, the CPA, the dogs in the street are kind of saying isn't fit for purpose.
Yeah, Tomás O'Shea calls it the elephant in the room, but you know, I suppose there's been so much discussion about it. Yeah, there's a lot of ifs, buts and maybes, I suppose, until we get to the end of the league campaign and then when the provincial system kicks off again. But I suppose in fairness to the GAA, you know, it's said ad nauseum at this stage that slow has changed in the GAA. But in 2016, you know, Croke Park abandoned the proposal for the tiered system. It didn't even make it to Congress. And here we are 3 years later and 75% of the delegates there are voting it through. And I don't know, maybe Mick, you've got your ear to the ground. I wonder, what do you see as the biggest driver of that change? I know some people are suggesting it's John Horne in the quest for a legacy, but 3 years, that's a huge turnaround. I was wondering, what do you think the main factors are behind that?
It's a massive turnaround, you're right, Dick. Yeah, like, I mean, I'd say the fact that you have a GAA president putting his shoulder to the idea certainly is an aspect to it, for sure. I mean, again, coming into the vote last week, if you looked just at the very, very basic, okay, what way are the counties voting? It was quite close. I mean, if you're talking about getting 60% of the vote, which is what they needed, it was quite close. But then, like, you know, if you've got the GAA president pushing this and you've the director general beside him agreeing with him, you know, that's the management committee. So you have all of those. And invariably, the overseas units and various other kind of boards and stuff like that who have a vote will come along as well. So straight away, you have them. So that would have made an impact for sure, just in pure terms of vote. In terms of the change around, I think, if you look back to the time when they did the Tommy Murphy Cup concept, the gap then, it's just much wider now. And there's lots of different reasons for that. But like, it is definitely the gaps. I mean, the big thing for football has always been that it has, unlike hurling, is that football has a gigantic middle class where you've got lots of teams that are quite close to each other, which makes the idea of breaking it up into tiers quite difficult. But the reality is, like, that as long as we keep going this way, there are a top half dozen that are pulling away from everyone else. So they have to come up with ways of closing those gaps. Now, I'm not saying that this tiered format is the way to close those gaps, but I think a tiered format is part of a much bigger template or a much bigger idea to close those gaps. But as I say, this particular one, I'm not sure. It strikes me as quite clunky. But look, it's there now. We just have to see how it goes.
Yeah, what do you make of that, Rory? The gigantic middle class. You could argue that Meath have no more chance of winning in All-Ireland than Leitrim, and this Tier 2 system isn't going to change that.
This, I suppose, that comes back to the point that when we were here, was it a month ago, and Pat Nolan was in. Of course, this is a hobby horse for Pat, and he made that point that, like, if you take maybe the bottom two or three teams in Division One, and you go more or less the whole way down, possibly to the last couple of teams in Division Three, there wouldn't be a huge difference between any of them on any given particular day. So he made, which is a fair point, and it's probably the one that's caused the most bone of contention, the reasonable assertion that, like, why are you drawing a line, you know, right there, right in between Division 1, 2 and 3 and 4? But I suppose they have to draw a line somewhere. And that's, I mean, I think it's in now. You know, it is. It's the horse is bolted now, and I think it's. There are good aspects to this. I think the issue for me though was I just couldn't understand the rush. I mean, Mick was just saying there, 35 minute debate on this, Mick, like, for a massively fundamental shift in how we run our kind of marquee competition, and it got a half an hour's chat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me tell you though, when you're there, that's long. If you think about it, right, they say in secondary schools, right, I mean, I remember when I was in secondary school, they said your class was 40 minutes long, because after 40 minutes, the average person, their mind starts to wander.
Yeah, yeah.
So 35 minutes, it was, I take your point, I know what you're saying, but like, you know, there was plenty of discussion about it going back along. I mean, I saw this morning, extraordinary story in the Mayo News, that Mayo didn't even have a delegation there. Which is another issue again. That's another day's work now. But like, I think
did they have someone else voting for them, like the lads in the doll?
Yeah,
I genuinely, you know what? It's something to be teased out now. But like, it's like, that's another issue again. in terms of engagement, and did we fully, did everyone fully engage with it? I think there was good engagement, but like, I mean, go back to the idea just of tiers and what, like, I mean, the one thing that strikes me, and one of the reasons why we have this growth of an upper class, it's to do with the National League, funny enough, I think. I mean, the fact that we have a Division 1, 2, 3, and 4, and particularly Division 1, there's 5 or 6 teams in Division 1 who basically live there now, and they play each other all the time, and they're pulling away from everybody else. Now, how that impacts on the tiers? Well, my view would be that if they went back to the system they had before, which was 1A, 1B, 2A, 2B, where you mix up the Division 1 teams with the Division 2 teams and create a 1A and 1B and do the same at the lower level, you give those teams opportunities, the aspiring teams, the improving teams, the opportunity to play against slightly better teams. Now, if they had a springtime of doing that, and then they went into a tiered system with the knowledge, for argument's sake, if you're a team in Division 2 and you've played Dublin in March and you've run into 3, 4, 5 points, whatever the case may be, you are at least put in a performance that you're happy with, that you feel you're coming forward with. That's something you can bring forward, you know? And that's something that gradually, incrementally over time, will add value to your season. Whereas if you're stuck now down in Division 3 and 4 and you're playing the same crowd that you're going to be playing again in the summertime, I think that is an issue. Like that is an issue. But there seems to be absolutely no appetite whatsoever to tinker with the league system. My own view is that they have to tinker with the league system if they want a tiered system to work. But there doesn't seem to be any appetite to do that.
And speaking on that league, I mean, Division 2 and Division 3 next year in the National Football League is going to be
hilarious.
It's going to be very, very interesting, yeah. You know? Very interesting. Like,
Mickey said it was a slightly still-defined debate. There was one dramatic moment, or it seemed dramatic to us as we saw it reported on Twitter, when John Horn presented a text message from our boss, yeah, Declan McBennett, saying that the latter stages of the Tier 2 were going to be shown on RTE, if at all possible. We can't really answer that question, but you can answer it for us. Do you think there's an appetite for that? And secondly, do you think that helped sway the delegates?
I'm just going to sit here quietly and make you answer that question now for however long it takes. that was one of those just, oh my God. It was like, I don't know, it was like peace in our time, waving the piece of paper, you know. I have it. Like anything else, it struck me, this is another leap of faith here, you know, as with everything, with the tiers, and with everything, with making the second biggest change to the football championship in 135 years of the GAA, it's all on a bit of a leap of faith. So, I mean, you get a text, I mean, even what he read out, it was kind of like, we're confident that we'll be able to show those games. Now,
Did he read out the text?
He read the text out, or he kind of paraphrased it, I would say. But he read it out. I had it in a report there last Sunday. Don't ask me to recall it. basically, Declan McBennett's text essentially said, RTE are confident that we will be able to broadcast. I think he was referring to the semi-final and final live, right? Mm. I think the plan from a GA perspective is to possibly clear the weekend of the Tier 2 semi-finals.
Because they have loads of weekends to work with.
Like. They have tons. So that'll be cleared, right? No problem. Everybody will stop. And we'll all be glued to whoever will be in it. Like, as an idea, I mean, the idea of the media coverage thing is interesting. I just listened to the piece that Tomás did there. I couldn't agree more with Tomás, really. I'd be kind of on his side of the fence on this one now. Like, you can't expect huge media coverage. No. But I think when people talk about media, they're not talking about podcasts, they're not talking about radio, they're not talking about newspapers, they're talking about television. Mm. They want TV. They want to be on TV. I mean, my own view is that if that is such a huge driving force, that can't be part of a rational debate about, well, what's the best structure for a competition? Yeah. That's, media coverage comes with quality, and it comes with public interest and stuff like that. And of course you need it. Of course you need it, and in this case it will have to be sort of it'll have to be artificially added, if you like, to give this competition the kind of kudos it'll need to get up and off the ground. I mean, we've seen what's happened before with big competitions. But I would also go back to the All-Ireland B Championships that existed back in the early 90s that wouldn't have got a lot of media coverage, but they gave a few teams a hell of a start. I mean, Leitrim won a Connacht title in 94, essentially off the back of winning an All-Ireland B a couple of years previously. So my point is that, yes, they need the media coverage, and absolutely the GAA need to play hardball with RTE. But, I mean, people have to realise, the next time the GAA will be playing hardball with RTE, it'll be 2022. So, I mean, I'm not exactly sure what they expect to happen in the meantime. Like, are RT going to turn around and go, we won't bother showing that massive hurling championship game. We go with the tier two semi-final from Pearse Park in Longford or wherever.
And what you have to remember, and what people maybe don't really fully get a lot of the time with this, Mick, is there are four broadcasting slots every weekend. 4 o'clock, 6 o'clock Saturday, 2 o'clock, 4 o'clock Sunday. There's 100 games as things stand. You know, you're now adding in another layer of competition. You know, there are only a finite number of broadcasting slots. So you can't make a silk purse out of a sow's ear in that regard. And, you know, so look, let's see what happens.
It's hard going because you don't even know how the players are going to react. Yeah. I mean, listening to the other piece there from Kieran Martin, like, I mean, you know, he started that piece saying, lads are all going to go away to New York. And he finished it up saying, well, our lads will probably stay and keep playing. I mean, we don't know.
No one knows.
Nobody knows.
You don't know how guys will react. It's going to be different for every county. I mean, Westmeath made a very good point. I was talking to a guy from Westmeath the other week. He made an excellent point, like, that if you're a genuine dual county, which Westmeath, to be fair to them, when it comes to making fixtures, they are, right? If let's say, for argument's sake, Westmeath end up in Tier 2 and they end up going to the final, that's going to impact on their club fixtures in hurling and football. Going on into sort of July, August. So, I mean, there's a hell of a lot of stuff like that.
The added costs to county boards to keep training going and all, you know, it's...
This is the butterfly effect.
Spaghetti bolognese. Yeah. Like, I mean, it's sort of... this is the point, again. It's the thing that... And this is why the debate the last day was so... Sort of, you could go, yes, on one point, and then find another guy going, no, just as passionately on the same point, is that every single county have their own bespoke issues to deal with. Like, you know, so that's why it's very, very hard to find a system that works for everybody. And it's why, if you're going, well, we're not going to do this without TV coverage. Well, lads, you're going to have to do something. Do you feel any more franchised?
Okay,
I mean, people have been disenfranchised. Do you feel any more franchised now, playing in a competition where you don't have a hope of winning it?
Yeah.
I'm not sure where you start with this, but you certainly have to start with kind of going, okay, we accept our position in the world. Now let's find a competition structure that kind of relatively closely fits our needs. Mm. Now, whether they've gone too fast with this one is absolutely a very strong point to make.
Okay.
But certainly change is coming. Yeah. And all counties need to get their head around that and get with it.
Right. Well, it's going to keep you in column inches for the winter anyway, Mick. So thanks very much for taking the call, and we'll chat to you again.
Problem. All right, no problem.
Cheers, Mick.
All right. Well, I think we'll have to leave it at that for the week. Obviously, log on to rte.ie/sport and the RT News Now app for all the GA news.
We're in Dublin, actually, on Saturday night for the Dublin semi-finals. Ballyboden taking on Jude's and that first semi-final, which is a 5:15 throw-in, and then that followed by defending champions Kilmacud Crokes, who are taking on the surprise package, really, I suppose, of the competition so far, which is Thomas Davis. That's at 7 o'clock. Both games can obviously go to extra time or on the air 4:45.
Lovely. And of course, Saturday and Sunday Sport will keep you across all the weekend's news, and you've Game On with its cast of thousands during the week, so you're well set. I'd like to say thank you to Declan and to Rory. I've been Mikey Stafford. This is the RTGA podcast, which is, as always, available wherever you get your podcast, because you're listening to it right now. All right, thanks very much. Chat to you again next week.